Welcome to the November issue of the Aldi podcast. In this issue, the regular I Once Met column has a saucy twist and has escalated into I Once Kissed. And it's not just anyone. Madeline Smith, aka Miss Caruso, was once the bedfellow of the James Bond heartthrob Roger Moore, who she starred alongside in Live and Let Die. It happened in the slightly staged environment of the Pinewood Studios in 1973, when Madeline was undressed by a magic and magnetic watch. Madeline, are you able to describe exactly what went on?
What went on? Under the frock?
Exactly.
What went on in the bed? Well, okay, I can. It wasn't magic. It was not a magic watch. First of all, I was in bed with Roger, and we were having a little bit of kissing and a little bit of this and that and the other thing, and the doorbell went, and Roger gets out of the bed and goes and opens the door, and the whole storyline is I sneak into the wardrobe and put my frock on again and want to sneak out, but I have to stay hidden, and then he comes and lets me out and undoes the dress with his magic watch. Well, first of all, under the covers, it was all very, very polite and very, what shall I say, old-fashionedly decent carryings on. He was wearing his boxer shorts, and I was wearing the most appalling, fluffy, nappy-like knickers. And there are photographs to prove it. They're just appalling. It's exactly what, you know, in the olden days, when I was a baby, we used to have cloth nappies. And your mum, one's mum, used to put a plastic, or a horrible plastic pair of sort of over knickers, obviously to prevent leakage. This is awfully crude, but it's actually true.
Mm.
The knickers that I wore in Live and Let Die actually looked like those plastic knickers that were put over they were terry toweling nappies. A lot of people will remember this.
Oh no.
Yes, it was appalling. Absolutely. How on earth wardrobe thought this was sexy, I don't know. But anyway, I'm wearing those. He's wearing his boxer shorts. And then you did ask me about other goings on. So the goings on with regard to the magic watch were quite simply that chicken wire or fishing wire or some kind of wire had been run down the zip that went down my back. Right? You with me?
With you.
Annabelle?
Yep, got it.
And so when Roger put his magic watch at the top of the dress at the back to magically undo it, three people were between my legs pulling two, I think, on the wire and one on the actual dress, frantic to get this thing to come down. There is no romance whatsoever in filming.
No, it sounds like they're definitely...
Very intimate, but the wrong kind of intimacy.
No, three people to get
there
that dress
three.
Off.
I hadn't remembered it was three, but Roger Moore has recently republished Sir Roger's diaries. And he relates that there were three people at war underneath my frock. I thought it was two, but actually it was three. And recently I met the delightful Ian, I think it's Ian Whitlock his name, who was actually the boy who was under my frock, the assistant to special effects. We fell into each other's arms.
And so was it one of his earlier jobs?
Yes, he must have been all of, I don't know, in his teens, I should think.
And so his opening job was sort of between the legs of a Bond girl.
Yes, that's right. It took about 3 days to film the scene.
Wow, gosh. So you must have been quite nervous ahead of filming.
No. I'd already worked with Roger in The Persuaders, which was a teleseries about a couple of spoof detectives, he and Tony Curtis, who'd been imported from America to make this delightful series. And I'd been in an episode directed by Roger, Sir Roger, as I should call him.
Sir
although
Roger.
He never wanted to be called Sir. And he obviously liked me. I heard this later. He liked me, recommended me for this part in Live and Let Die, and I never even had to audition.
That's brilliant. So there was no having to speak with the casting agent?
No. And... Now, that is not normal. I mean, I've had horrible auditions. Most of them I liked. Some of them I didn't. But they're all pretty tough. I think this is probably one of the very few, I was about to say the only, but one of the very few jobs I didn't audition for.
Gosh, how fantastic.
I know. Unbelievable.
And had you filmed a love scene before?
Now, let me think seriously. I had made, I have to think of the colour of my hair, Annabelle. If my hair is dark, it's approximately the time of doing Live and Let Die. If it's reddish, it's earlier. So when I was in the Two Ronnies, that would be, my real hair was reddish. I wore wigs in the Two Ronnies. So the reddish stage is about 1970, 71. The dark haired stage is 72 into 73. So who had I kissed when I had dark hair? Let me think now. Yeah, Peter Wingard. In Jason King. And that would be probably a year or so before Live and Let Die. Yeah.
And it was...
I leapt straight in. He was on the chaise longue and I leapt straight in with a smacker.
Oh, brilliant.
Yes. Hello, Peter Wingard. Lovely to meet you. Let's get down to it.
And so with the love scenes, there wasn't too much reshooting. You were sort of very capable.
To be honest, all of these films and all of these TV series, which were made on film. So in other words, when I say they were filmed, they were actually done with cine film. Were done pretty quickly, and I don't think the Bond film was done on a low budget, but there wasn't a lot of money around. It seems an odd thing to say, but there wasn't. The early 70s were quite doldrums-ish.
Right.
People weren't really going to the cinema. They were made very quickly. I was in a carry-on film. I mean, they took a month to make it. I did some horror films about the time, the dark air era. they were made very, very quickly on a very low budget. And I mean, you know, come 5:20 in the afternoon, the klaxon went and we were home. So there was no overtime, none of that. It was all done very tightly. And of course, the person that kept the schedule was the first assistant director.
Right.
He was the right arm, or right brain, if you like, of the director. And he made sure that all the scenes that were scheduled to be shot that day were done and dusted by 5:20.
Great, and then you were off home.
Absolutely, the unions were absolutely adamant. Otherwise, every moment over that time was hugely expensive.
Right, so double pay for overtime.
Oh, absolutely. Not for me, but all the cameramen and all the guys. Yeah.
Gosh, how interesting.
Yeah, it's a fact, actually. I mean, quite literally, if you were in a studio, the doors were opened. But I can remember in the horror films I did, Derek actually shouting, "Open the doors!" And up they went, and it was the end of the day, and all the dried ice, all the fumes used to go out. Yep, that was it. End.
A huge
horn went off at that time. It was extraordinary. Yeah, absolutely.
That really is.
Yeah, like a foghorn.
Get out.
Yeah.
And so the question we are all dying to know: what was it like working with the sainted Roger Moore?
He was a sainted guy. His nature was absolutely as you imagine him to be. I mean, I've seen him in loads of stuff on telly, and I know the kind of mood he would have been in on the day. He never came in a bad mood. He got on wonderfully well with Tony Curtis. People often ask me that. They were very different men, but they got on incredibly well. They worked beautifully together, had the same kind of humour. And of course, the fact that Roger Moore had such a lovely sense of humour, so important. For me, it's the most important thing in life. Never mind about looks or any of that. The guy had the most wonderful sense of humour. So he would come in a good mood, he would lighten the atmosphere, and it was just so easy to work with him. Only fly in the ointment was the fact that his wife was around.
She was floating around whilst you're on the bed.
Any kissing or anything, you know, untoward was not on. I mean, you know, nothing got out of hand, because Louisa was quite a firebrand. Still is. I think she's still much around, so be careful what I say. But she was literally on the set the whole time.
Gosh, I wonder if
she... While we were canoodling, Louisa was looking through... I can't remember. Yeah, I think the bed did have bars, didn't it? It did. She was definitely at the bottom of the bed watching us.
Good, how...
I know.
Peculiar. But I wonder if she chose to march around the sets of other films or whether it was specific to James Bond.
I would think it was probably specific to the scene,
I can understand why.
I think, you know, there was a lot for him. There was a lot of rolling around in the hay. And remember, I was the first one that he rolled around with.
Yes, because yours was the opening scene for the film.
I am and always will be. Even when I'm pushing up the daisies, I will still be his number one Bond girl.
Well, that's quite an accolade.
Yes.
And the dress. So did
horrible thing. Hated it.
So did you get to keep it?
No, thank you very much. I didn't. And I heard rumours that it was actually auctioned at some point or being taken around the country at some point. It had a life after the film. Annabelle, I have never kept anything except this. That which you see around my neck, this little plastic necklace.
It's very beautiful.
Which I do love.
Diamonds and sort of...
It is pastiche, but I do love it. And I did ask if I could have it, and that was a play I did. In the 80s. Yeah.
It's very pretty. It's actually very eye-catching. It's sort of like teardrop...
It was a little 20s, it was a Frederick Lonsdale play, and all very 20s, 30s, and I just loved this necklace, so I asked if I could keep it.
It's very pretty.
It's the only thing I have ever had.
And far more valuable than the
it's
blue...
Oh, yes, the memory, sweetheart. Well, the dress, the awful thing about the dress, and this is serious now, the awful thing about it was it had these dreadful plastic cups, and which is so unflattering. I think it is an unbelievably unflattering dress. First of all, it's choking me anyway, which I hate. And then it's got these things sticking out at the front. I'm somewhere in there, but I'm not quite sure where. But I'm certainly not that. I've said before that I looked like Mr. Michelin. Yes, I did.
Gosh.
I looked as though I could have floated. could have put a lorry on top of me. But it was horrible. And, of course, because the fabric was so thick and ungiving, that's one of the reasons it was so difficult to get that zip to come down. That's why they were pulling and tugging so hard. It was horrible. It was, I don't know, it was all rayon-y, thick.
And what was the temperature like in Pinewood Studios?
Freezing. It was January, and it seems that whenever I made any kind of film, it didn't matter what it was, whether there was night location or day, it was freezing. And I used to arrive at these film studios, which are not very romantic, I have to tell you, always set in the middle of nowhere. There was always ice on the ground. Always. It always seemed to be in my memory, January, February, and that's true. Yeah. Always. And any location filming, I was petrified with cold.
Oh, gosh.
Yep. Not with fear, but with cold.
Cold.
Mm.
And Roger Moore, did you keep in touch with him after filming Live and Let Die?
I saw him many times after Live and Let Die because a dear man used to come and visit. He would go to Elstree for celebrations about the saint, and he invited me to go along, and I'd sit there dimly and he'd come and embrace me. And then, nicest of all, towards the end of his life, I guess probably the last 5 to 10 years, he did a show, a sort of one-man show. And Gareth Owen, lovely guy, Gareth Owen, who was his PA, helped him, I think, to kind of write the script and also to interview him, much as you're interviewing me. Mm-hmm. And he used to talk about me. And then on one occasion, I was invited to go along. And I didn't realise he was going to talk about me. And I actually slunk right underneath the seat. I was so embarrassed. He talked about how fond he was of me. And I found that incredibly touching. Mm. I still do.
So you must have been incredibly sad last year.
Oh, horrible. Oh, horrible. Horrible. But the knowledge that he was very ill... When I learnt that afterwards, I wouldn't have wanted him to have existed another day, because I know of what he died, and it's horrible.
Yeah.
So, but he lived a very good life.
Yeah.
He'd been unwell along the line, and he'd fought through it. I know he had heart trouble and collapsed on stage at one time. He was a very brave man. I'm not sure whether he really enjoyed particularly good health, but you would never, ever have known it. And
because of his great nature.
He had such a genuinely, I would call it a very grateful nature. I think he was a man who underestimated his own talent, who always felt that he was lucky to have got where he got. But in fact, he got where he got through sheer niceness, through sheer grit and determination and talent.
Yeah.
It is not easy, believe you me. It isn't easy to get up at 3 and 4 in the morning and go and be bright and jolly on set and get through your lines and go back again the next morning and repeat it. You know, and hideous locations he was on and hideous things he was asked to do and stunts. Always, always with a smile. I mean, everybody says that about him.
It's really impressive. That
lovely,
that's
lovely man.
So were you aware of what you were signing up to with the Bond films? Had you watched earlier Bond films?
I had indeed. And I had had the odd encounter with Sean Connery. I will relay this. Dear old Sean Connery, I had much admired him. I honestly think Sean Connery is a wonderful actor and has got better and better and better as he's got older and more grizzled. So this is nothing against Sean, nothing whatsoever. I'm a great admirer of his, and of course I had seen those early Bond with him. I think he was a magnificent Bond.
However, incredible voice.
Wonderful voice. Got, as I say, got deeper and better.
Better and better.
More, yeah. But when I was a very late developer, to put it mildly, that is an understatement. I came fresh from convent school, not knowing anything about anything. And I was very fortunate to be in a film with the wonderful Ava Gardner. And we filmed this in Scotland, and we all stayed in a fantastic hotel called the Peebles Hydro. It was a golfing hotel, really. But the film company took it over. And darling Ava Gardner, very shy, lovely lady, was the star of this rather dreadful film called The Ballad of Tam Lin, after a Robert Burns poem. Anyway, I'm totally innocent, gormless idiot, aged 19, and I'm sitting at supper with all these wonderful actors and Roddy McDowall, who was a very famous actor who was directing it. Everybody goes off to bed. And I've got a book under my arm, trying to get through this Russian tome. And I sneak up this very steep staircase, and there's somebody behind me, and it's Sean Connery. And he comes into my bedroom and says, "Hello, do you mind if I come in?" And I said, "Well, I'm very sorry, I'm about to have my bath." "I can run the bath with you," he said, or "for you, indeed." And he said, "And we can read the book together."
Goodness me.
And I said, "Mr. Connery, I'm very sorry, I've got to go to sleep now and I've got to get up very early," not knowing quite what his intentions were because I was so gormless. And I said, "And also, Roddy McDowall is sleeping next door. We mustn't keep him awake."
Oh my
this
goodness.
This is actually true.
And you were 17, 18?
19. Very virginal and very innocent. We'll leave it at that.
And quite mortified.
And mortified. And didn't I had an inkling what he wanted, but wasn't completely sure. Anyway, bless him, he backed off and went out of the room. And then I went for some kind of long walk a day or two later, and met him. And he looked away. He was very cross.
Kept his eyes down.
He cast his eyes down. And I'm so embarrassed to this day
about that
entire
incident.
Oh, well,
I'm not sure you should be embarrassed. I mean, and at least it's not sort of bordering on
me. But he was a good boy.
#MeToo.
He was a good... No, absolutely not. No. He was a good boy. It's just one of those embarrassing stories.
It just sounds sort of mildly flirtatious, but sort of thankfully
avoided.
No, he
was a good boy. No, he was a good boy. A genuinely good boy.
That's good.
Maybe he did just want to read The Brothers Karamazov.
Perhaps.
We'll leave it there.
Very possibly. And I'd love to know, what was your relationship status at the time of filming with Roger Moore?
Single.
Right, because I was imagining that from that moment onwards, it was the ultimate chat-up line in any bar context. I was a Bond girl. And have you used it a lot?
I try, darling, I try not to use it. People are now recognising me quite a lot, which is very flattering, because I don't really look like that anymore.
She does look, you do, you've got the same face, facial structure, and
oh, bless you.
Definitely.
Well, I try to keep the same bubble that I had then, because really I'm comedy, and the thing that I haven't really made clear here is that it was a comedy scene. It was almost music hall. It was what is... I personally think...
I'm not sure how comic it was at all.
Well, but it was very...
Romance.
It was, I know, it was romantic, but it was very light-hearted. I mean, the lovely looks that he gave Moneypenny and the little books.
And I mentioned hashtag me too early in the context of Sean Connery, which you say that absolutely doesn't...
But he was a good boy.
Yeah, he was a good boy.
He was a good boy. We all have had... You can't get away with it. We've had near misses in showbiz, but or just very unpleasant, sardonic remarks made over the years, inevitably.
You've survived unscathed.
I've survived.
And was it discussed between your peers of these kind of activities were going on?
I went to an after film party when filming, and I cannot remember what film it was, at Elstree, so it was probably a horror film. I went to a party, and I can remember her name was Janet, a lovely actress called Janet, who had been in On the Buses. And there was a lot of disappearing upstairs. And she said to me, "Maddie, go home. You don't want to know what's going on upstairs."
And I so she did you a favour?
She did me a favour. Yeah, she did. So these things did occur. But Annabelle, we have to remember that some people were glad and were compliant and didn't mind.
Yeah. And I was interested to hear your thoughts on the role of the Bond girl.
Yes.
Within the sort of the Me Too age, and now it's sort of, for example, the latest Bond venture, Spectre, claims to star the first feminist Bond, so that would be Daniel Craig.
Yes.
And also it includes the oldest Bond girl ever, which is the 51-year-old Monica Bellucci.
Indeed.
Although the actress herself rejects the label Bond girl, preferring Bond woman. And what do you think of this graduation from Bond girl to Bond woman, from sexy accessories, arguably, to partners in crime? Do you think that's quite an important upgrade?
I don't feel... It's not in my heart to feel strongly about it. I guess by the time, bless her, you're 51, you're not a Bond girl anymore. That would be idiot to call her a Bond girl. She's a Bond lady. I like to think of us as ladies. I'm not fond of woman, particularly. I remember my father, my dad used to tease me for calling people ladies, and he used to laugh at me, but I'm not terribly fond of woman. I would rather that we were ladies.
Ladies.
That kind of gives us a sort of gracious, ladylike air. It's very important to me to be ladylike in all circumstances, you know, even when you're pushing an over-romantic chap away. Be ladylike about it. Don't be vulgar. And don't be a vulgarian, in other words. Mm.
Hugh Hefner, the Playboy King who died last year, once described the films as Playboy magazine with a gun, the Bond films.
Ah.
And what do you think of this comparison of the Bond films?
I think Playboy... Think about that now. Playboy was I haven't looked at it for a long time, very, very naughty, much naughtier than the Bond. A lot is sort of implicit in the Bond, but it's far more innocent than Playboy ever was.
I would agree with your answer.
Thank you, Pat.
The only thing I thought which I would agree with Hugh was some of the names, like Honey Rider,
true.
Pussy Galore, and even sort of Miss Caruso is quite saucy.
Do you know, I never thought of that. I never ever thought of that. I'm too dim to know. I actually genuinely don't know. At the time, I was called Beautiful Girl.
Just Beautiful Girl?
Yeah, Beautiful Girl on the credits. Since then, I'm now Miss Caruso. I think I was called Miss Caruso, actually, in the scene. But on the credits, I was just Beautiful Girl, yes.
Well, it's quite nice to get your name subsequently.
My love, they built the part up. I think it started out as very tiny on the page. And obviously Guy Hamilton and Roger, obviously that so light.
Michelin costume.
Yeah, yes, right.
Your favourite Bond?
Him.
Roger Moore.
Sean, maybe for Edge.
Mm.
And possibly Sean is more the Fleming Bond.
Yeah.
I hate to say it. But because I like Roger so much, and he brought such a wonderful touch to it, and was obviously so eminently popular, I have to go for Roger. I could cuddle Roger, you know, till kingdom come.
So you mentioned, yes, briefly in the office earlier, that yourself and Peter Cook would have made a wonderful couple.
Well, actually, I'll be quite honest about this. This is a fact. I filmed a John Betjeman poem, and I actually sat on John Betjeman's lap. There you are. Lovely guy. I filmed a John Betjeman's poem. It was called Seaside Golf, and it was part of a half-hour special for Anglia Television. And Eric Morecambe filmed another of the poems. And so I went to Cromer and on a wonderful Lynx course with Peter Cook, and we filmed in fabulous Edwardian costume. We filmed Seaside Golf together, and oh boy, he was a fantastic golfer. And he did ask for my phone number.
What phone?
And I was a good girl, and I said, I'd love to give it to you, Peter, Peter, However, David Buck will be answering the phone.
And
there was
sort
of pause. Ah. And that was sadly the end of that. I was living then with an actor, stroke, radio writer, chappie called David Buck, and we'd been together for several years at the time. And I just thought, oh, in another life, yes, please.
Life.
Because the real Peter Cook was so funny.
Terrible.
Part of what we filmed was with an old car, and he was doing something with the car mirror, and I was nearly sick with laughing. And that's a true story.
Oh, brilliant. Well, Madeline, thank you so much.
Thank you, Annabelle.
Thank
you're
you
great to talk
office.
To.
I really, really enjoyed that. And I think we will all be dreaming of Roger Moore.
Yeah, please do. And Peter Cook.
And I think Peter Cook definitely as
oh,
well.
Funny man.
Thank you.
Oh, Roger's.